The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, forget the samba, it's the new jack swing as Wilshire-inspired Roy's boys beat Brazil in a brilliant midweek all round for sides from the British Isles. Meanwhile, Cup of Nations semis. Nigeria destroy Mali like Vanilla Ice's cover of Buffalo Soldier. Now in final, they face itsy-bitsy teeny wiener, penalty shootout winning Burkina. A top floating brain reports. Elsewhere, there's Alex McLeish running away after 40 days. We ask what is lurking down in the forest. We enjoy your posts and tweets. Plus, we look forward to all the weekend's action. Man United, Everton, Southampton, Man City, and all that in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hey, everybody. How exciting is this? Barry Glendinning's here.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. So's Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hi, Raphael. And so is Rob Smythe.
Hi, James.
Rob, it's been a bit like that cat that died yesterday. It's been too long.
Good for the Norisol knowledge.
Yeah.
Who knew?
No, I actually Googled Marley cover versions, and boy, was I surprised to see that he had taken Bob Marley's rough materials and made little, polished it into a little bit of a diamond. But the weirdest thing about it was he did it in 2008.
Really?
Yeah, 10 years after you would have thought he'd been barred from any recording studio anywhere on the planet. Maybe he has his own. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
I missed that one.
Yeah, me too. I always thought it would be a bit like the end of Boogie Nights. He'd been denied access to the studios by now, you know? Do you remember the end of Boogie Nights when they're trying, they're convinced they're about to record Dirk Diggler and his cohort? I can't remember what his name. Have you seen this film?
I have, yeah. I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah. Dirk Diggler's got an enormous, well, Diggler, and he's got his friend, and they have spent all their money on cocaine, and they are basically jacked out of their heads, and they are trying to get back into the recording studio, who they owe a massive amount of money to, and they won't let them in. They said, well, we can't pay you until we record this hit. Don't be stupid. Let us in so we can roll all the hits so we can pay you. And, of course, all the music's complete nonsense.
I do think there should be some sort of board of control. Like, say, the Dubious Goals panel, that anyone who wants to record a cover version,
right,
it has to be submitted and approved before it's allowed to be released.
I like that, Barry. Who would sit on such a panel? Michael Bolton?
We could have Guardian music critic Alexis Petridis.
Right, okay.
I've always thought he's a value his opinion.
So it's basically going to be a snob, elitist panel that you're talking about.
Well, you could have one. You could have Simon Cowell on just for
right
moron value. He has no appreciation of
this. This is very topical because in Germany, Heino, who you might know or not know.
No.
He's that really frightening looking sort of albino guy with big black glasses. He's a German Schlager singer, chanson singer. He issued a cover album with Rammstein and Fantastische Vier and did all these cover songs, and they all hate him for it. But the way it works in Germany is that if you don't change the arrangement of a song and a tonality, you're allowed to cover whatever song you want. They can't stop you from doing it. Of course, you still pay the royalties.
Yeah.
But they cannot actually say, no, this is my song. You're not allowed to release it.
Really? Mm. And in other countries, you are allowed to deny someone.
Yeah, because I think Terence Trent D'Arby once denied someone covering Wishing Well.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
I think Tina Turner.
Okay.
top news.
So however bad life seems, it could have been worse.
Ronan Keating once covered Fairy Tale New York, which is an aberration in itself, him covering a song like that. But he also changed the lyrics.
Did he? What did he change them to?
He took out Cheap Lousy Faggot and replaced it with something more radio-friendly. I can't remember exactly what. But, you know, who the hell does he think he is?
I don't know.
Or actually, it's you cheap louse and faggot.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. England-Brazil. Come on, Rob. We've had you being scathing. Now it's time to wave the flag. Yeah?
Yeah, they were good, weren't they? They played some good football. Wilshire was outstanding. It's difficult, though, to know how good or not.
Oh, here he goes. Well, he lasted all of seven words there.
I kind of think if the kind of imaginary person comes down from Mars and you said one of these teams is associated with samba football and one is associated with thud and blunder, you wouldn't have known which one, really.
If you were to say to an imaginary person from Mars, Bayern and Barcelona are squabbling over a 21-year-old from one of these teams, would they have maybe thought it was Jack Wilshere as opposed to that Neymar fella?
Yeah, he was brilliant, wasn't he? He looks like he's good enough to play almost for any team in the world, really. You wouldn't, I would imagine he'd be really comfortable with Barcelona in Spain. He's got a lovely thing of playing through balls on the run, which actually is a really difficult skill. Not many people can do it, and he played three or four last night. And he linked really well with Rooney, which is encouraging, because kind of England have been quite prosaic for a while, and Rooney's kind of become a more functional player, and I think it's nice for him to have someone who, there were lots of kind of little short 5 yard 1-2s and things like that. So yeah, all good. Probably the best they've played, actually, in terms of kind of the neatness of the football. I'd say it's the best they've played under Hodgson.
All right, as you say, Brazil didn't look the best, though, did they? A terrible start for Scolari. The Brazilian press saying that they looked uninspired, unmotivated. There was a lot of talk of the fact that Neymar's having a little bit of a Torres reaction to Ronaldinho's Drogba, if you know what I mean, that he becomes inhibited because Ronaldinho's very much the boss of the
team.
Is
Neymar any good? Whenever I've seen him, I just don't understand what the fuss is about.
I think the Ronaldinho thing is a big factor, because not only is the presence a problem, it's actually the position. Because Neymar, as you saw maybe yesterday, had to spend a lot of time wide out in the flanks, where he is not nearly as effective. He doesn't get the ball very often. Then when he gets the ball, you see he feels he has to do something very special, which is always wrong if you're in that kind of mindset. When you can't play the game, you have to then feel that you have to show something extraordinary. And that's why he's had some very interesting flashes, I thought, when he was running onto balls. His pace was very impressive. But then when he's out there, he's tried a little bit too hard many times. And I think Ronaldinho is his personal problem, because he plays in that kind of space where he should be behind the more orthodox number nine.
Well, you'd have to imagine that Ronaldinho's days in the Brazil shirt on that performance are going to be even more numbered than they were perhaps before.
He was very, very poor. I mean, he reminded me of the Ronaldinho that turned up in 2006 for the World Cup in Germany. Didn't look like an athlete, didn't look fully match fit, didn't look really interested, playing a really slow game. And you just wonder, you know, I mean, we hear a lot about players having sort of a second career, or, you know, doing really well in the Brazilian league. It happened with Adriano before. But I think the pace just...
I think he's on his fifth career. By
yeah. I think the pace of the game there, also too with the grass, which is a little bit different, is just perhaps more suited to former superstars than the current ones.
Right, well, the Brazilian press also concerned about their rubbish run of results against big teams. They haven't beaten a World Cup winner since 2009, when Dunga was the manager. Globo was pointing out, since then they've been beaten by France, Germany, Argentina, and of course now England. England, by contrast, of course, Barry, have beaten loads of big teams over the years. Germany in Germany, France, Italy, and now Brazil. And so that's a good measure of how well it bodes for a big competition.
I wouldn't get too excited about last night's result. Yeah, huh? England were good, but the same old sort of shortcomings were on show. Both defenders had, or centre halves had, bad ricks, one which resulted in a goal, what was the second, Chris Smalling's, which could easily have resulted in a goal. They conceded a penalty, and after the penalty was missed, they should have conceded another one, but the ref didn't give it, as Neymar tried to follow up and put the ball past Hart. He was taken out by Tom Cleverley, I think. That should have been a penalty. They're the negatives, but there are lots of positives to take from the game as well. But I think people were expecting Brazil to be a lot more flamboyant and samba-ish than you would expect from a team managed by Luis Felipe Scolari. That his teams don't play like that.
No. Well, they're only ranked 18th in the world, of course.
Well, there's a reason.
Brazil?
For that.
San Marino, Montenegro up next. In the meantime, Roy Hodgson warning Frank Lampard, don't go too far because I can't be bothered to follow you. Or something like that. Those were his words, I think, weren't they? If you want to keep playing for England, make sure you stick somewhere nearby.
Old Trafford.
Yeah, I think he was more thinking about West Coast destination. I thought it was a bit strange for Hodgson to weigh in on.
It seems quite small-minded for Hodgson. He's normally quite different. It was a great goal, wasn't it, from Lampard? I was thinking last night, there have been better players from kind of 25, 30 yards, like Bobby Charlton, whoever. I can't think of many who are better from 20 yards. Either for any situation the ball drops, he almost always hits not only the target, but kind of a very small portion of the target.
And usually someone on the way in as well, which is the extra special.
Yeah, that's
score.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Great goal, though.
Just one, but do you think Neymar is in danger of becoming what Zlatan used to be? This figure of fun who has the fantastic YouTube showreel. But we don't see much of him, and now that he has failed to deliver against England, everyone's going to think he's completely rubbish.
I don't know, what do they make of him in Germany with all this talk of possibly Guardiola making him Bayern's next big signing?
Well, in Germany, it's more or less the same as it is in England. People just don't see him very often, and then when he does turn up in a game like this, or when he plays in the Club World Cup and he doesn't perform, then people wondering, you know, what is all the fuss about? And there is an element of that, of course, if he looks a little bit more exciting in South America than playing in Europe. But I think that problem or that kind of conundrum will resolve itself, because I think this will be his last season. Possibly one more just before the World Cup, and then he'll certainly make that move, and then we can all make up our minds.
All right. Well, let's wait and see then. Now, elsewhere, some wag tweeting brilliantly that it was great midweek for sides from the British Isles. Wales won, Ireland won, Scotland won, just Newcastle, who lost to Germany. How was that game, Virapha?
The game was actually very good, very open game. France played some good football from counter-attacking positions most of the time. Ribéry had a very good game, which made a big change for him, because he usually doesn't turn up at all for France, and he's become a bit of a sort of a figure of a villain almost, because he never performs. But he played really well, should have scored a couple of goals. And Germany, from finding themselves 1-0 down, came back very strongly, although it looked all a little bit disjointed and disrupted in the second half, but that might have has something to do with the stream I was watching on The Guardian.
All right. I didn't realise that you hadn't beaten, you being Germany, hadn't beaten France since 1987. They are your bête noire.
I think it's 78. Yeah, that's right. 1987. And in France, we hadn't beaten them for 78 years even.
Wow.
So it's a big game. And Toni Schumacher was there,
right,
and was booed by the crowd, which is quite good, I think. And, of course, he deserves it, although he has repented and he's actually a nice guy. But I like a bit of retro aggro,
right,
from the crowd. that's a good one. It was good because a lot of players were missing from the first 11, Schweinsteiger, Reus, Götze, or people at the fringes of the first 11. But in their absence, Özil had an absolute monster of a game, and Khedira looked very, very strong. And the second goal, which basically Özil orchestrated and put a fantastic pass through Khedira, was fantastic. It might have been offside, but it was given, and you just have to look at that move and say, wow.
In other midweek friendly news, Sweden-Argentina. It was a win for Argentina, which none of us saw. Spain did look pretty awesome, caught some of this against Uruguay, I thought. Pedro getting a couple of goals there and a 3-1 win.
And Carlos Puyol scored on his 100th appearance.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah. Cool. Italy scraped a very, very, very late draw away to Holland to avoid losing six friendlies in a row. And, well, Barry, Scotland beat Estonia, Wales beat Austria, and Ireland beat Poland. A young, fresh-looking side that Trapp's unveiled here.
Yeah, it was an... I mean, I've only seen highlights because I was doing minute-by-minute reporting on the England game, but...
Oh.
There was a few interesting talking points from the game. The main one being the Aviva Stadium was surprisingly full, because it doesn't tend to get big crowds for friendlies.
But
it was full of Polish people. It was like a home international for Poland, because, you know, there's a huge Polish community in Ireland. Also, Wes Hoolihan got a long overdue run out. He got half an hour at the end and scored a fantastic goal, which was set up by an absolutely beautiful pass from Derby County's Jeff Hendrick, who showed vision, great composure to tee up Hoolihan, and Hoolihan scored the goal. And perhaps what was funniest about it was Trapattoni is clearly not a fan of Wes Hoolihan and has only picked him, I think, because of public pressure. And Trapp looked furious when Hoolihan scored the goal. Not just impassive, but he looked genuinely angry, as if, oh my God, this is really giving me a headache now. It's almost as if he was bringing him on for half an hour. I really hope he'll do badly, then everyone, I can just forget about him and people will get off my back. But now he kind of has a major selection headache. But Hoolihan, in that half hour, showed that it's a complete no-brainer. He absolutely should be the first name down on the Irish team sheet, and it's a travesty that he hasn't made more, or indeed any appearances in the 4 years of Trapp's reign.
All right, then. Well, that wasn't the only midweek action, of course. There were also the Africa Cup of Nations semi-finals, Mali, Nigeria, and Ghana against Burkina Faso. Jonathan Wilson will be telling us all about those after this. Well, also this midweek, most excitingly of all, perhaps, were those semi-finals in the Africa Cup of Nations. Joining us now from another departure lounge is Jonathan Wilson. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, James. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Can you hear me okay there in departure lounge?
Yes, I can. Thanks. Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant. My word, the Burkina Faso story, Jonathan.
Oh, it's extraordinary. I mean, we had the great lament for Zambia last time. And, of course, you know, there was the whole issue with the plane crash and everything in Libreville. And Burkina don't have that, but you know, there's a minnow coming from nowhere. You know, they've only been through the group stage once before, which is when they hosted the tournament in 98. Yeah, it's extraordinary story that we got this far. And, you know, all the subplots, think about the coach, Paul Putz, who's pretty much the only coach ever to be banned in the match fixing, and see sort of tale of redemption. And what they went through last night was an extraordinary refereeing game going against them. Incredible night. I think the best game in the tournament so far.
Jonathan, this incredible turnaround from last time when they lost all three of their matches in last year's tournament to this finalist performance this year. Is there any chance that they can overcome this juggernaut Nigeria?
I think there is a chance, yeah. I mean, defensively they're very sound. In part, I think they've been playing all the games in Nelson, the pitch is very slow. I think certainly Zambia really struggled with that. The Zambia game is based on quick breakaways, and you know, they weren't able to play the ball quickly on the ground because the sand was sort of holding it up. So yeah, they have benefited from playing in Elspeth. And you know, you look at that Nigeria side, and although they were really, really good in semi-final against Mali, they might be that Amenike who seemed to kind of dip into his groin in the final minutes. They had a wild swing at the ball, and he probably didn't need to, and then limped off, clutching his groin. Now, he says it's not too bad, but I'm slightly suspicious whether he'll be available. And Victor Moses went off after an hour with an ankle injury. Again, you know, the word out of Nigerian camp is he'll probably be all right. But if the two of them are carrying knocks or aren't fully fit, that does diminish Nigeria's attack. And I think it's the Burkina side. They've suddenly got this maturity, this sense of momentum. They'll be without Alan Traore. He missed the last two games with a thigh problem. He's almost certainly going to be out. And then, of course, the whole Kasoiba situation. That he got a second yellow card for a dive, which... You know, he clearly got kicked on the knee, it just wasn't a die. Got sent off late on last night. He's suspended. Now, there's all kinds of talk that the suspension might be lifted. My understanding of it is, certainly in Europe or in a deeper competition, is that you cannot appear against yellow cards, even if it's two yellows and make a red. So, you know, this is cap. They can do things that maybe FIFA wouldn't do, but nobody's quite sure how that's going to play out.
That was Jonathan Wilson having one or two audio issues there, and now he's on a plane. Barry, have you been enjoying the Cup of Nations?
I have, sort of belatedly. I kind of missed the party for the group stages, and I was just keeping an eye on the results. And from what I've seen, it didn't look to be very good. A lot of low-scoring affairs. And the pitch in Nelspruit is horrendously bad. The grass died and it's covered in sand. It's actually quite a hazardous for some players. You know, you've seen guys turn on their ankles, and trying to turn at speed looks quite dangerous because it is basically like playing on a beach. So that's been to the detriment of the tournament as well. But I really enjoyed the Nigeria-Mali game yesterday. Victor Moses has been playing very, very well. He set up two goals yesterday and, as John said, went off injured. I don't think it's too serious. He took a knock, played on for a while, and then was taken off after Nigeria had sort of were out of sight and the match was won. So I think it was just a precautionary thing.
Right. Presumably we'll all be rooting for Burkina Faso, little Burkina Faso, come the weekend, though.
Yeah, we will, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be able to point to the place on a map, to be honest. Right. But, yeah,
Mind you, thought South Africa was an island.
Let's not revisit that
farce.
We all like to root for the little guy, you know.
Right. Do you know what the capital of Burkina Faso is?
No, but I do know they're referred to as Burkinabes.
Oh, there you go. Well, it's Ouagadougou.
All right. Look,
Ouagadougou.
We could devote entire podcasts to my ignorance of world geography, you know, so...
Don't tell Pretty Sam at all, because...
kicking a blind man's stick.
Yeah, well, indeed. Anyway, let's move on then. Nottingham Forest. Alex McLeish surprising many people by walking out on the club, effectively. Well, tearing up his contract. Don't know how you'd put this, Rob. Yeah. 40 days after arriving.
Well, I suppose, yeah, when he went to Forest, he probably wanted to imitate Brian Clough, but not by quitting or being leaving within 40-odd days. Yeah, very strange. I suppose Forest will be quite pleased. I've kind of...
Will they?
Yeah, I think so. Doesn't McLeish just spend a couple of years draining the life out of a football club?
Well, yeah, it's just that this is now 4 managers in 7 months. Or it will be when they appoint somebody new.
No, it's a farce, and it's really unbecoming such a great club. But I think... I mean, most people, the impression you get is that most people didn't want him in the first place.
Right.
Quite pleased. But it depends who they get. I mean, it looks like Billy Davis will go back, which is, those things are always quite risky, so.
Yeah.
But I still think most Forest fans would prefer Billy Davis than Mr. McLeish.
Oh, okay.
I don't think there's any doubt they prefer Billy Davis, but Billy Davis is a very spiky character, notoriously so, and apparently... I don't know a great deal about him, but apparently he's quite a difficult employee. And Forrest's chairman, or the Al-Assawi family, are difficult to work for. So it's very hard to see how that's going to work out or last or deliver any sort of stability, which is what the club needs.
I could always take the safe option and get Roy Keane in.
Did you see, actually, last night before the England game... Adrian Childs said to Roy Keane, I didn't have you pegged as a Samba boy, and Keane just sort of tears him in half with a dirty look and goes, you know, I used to play the game, you know, I didn't just kick people.
It was revelatory. Very good, okay, well, shame for Forrest, but I hope things improve there. Post tweets, etc. Here's someone whose name I chopped off saying, oh, you were talking about inappropriate player names. How about sprightly Genoa forward Ciro Immobile? Who's anything but? Very good. Other contributions from listeners, Dublin Rue, mentioning Richard III denied Guinness Book of Records entry for longest time spent in a car park. Peter Odenwingy is delighted. Hammer Raccoon says... If QPR were going to go to the bother of signing Niall Ranger to play along Park Ji-sung to have that Park Ranger thing, you know, Hartlepool paradigm, they might as well go the whole hog and sign Pepe Reina as well, as Reina is Spanish for Queen. And Holland Hill replies, oh, they could get Niall Quinn. Except, of course, he doesn't play anymore, so, yeah. And Spider says, Blue Myth alert, Law didn't relegate Man United. They were already doomed regardless. This is all part of Monday's unexpected discussion about people not celebrating. Various people, including Magazinho, commented, please, please, please stop banging on about players deciding not to celebrate against certain clubs. I take your point. The whole reason that came up was just that it was an interesting thing to not celebrate but then try and cheat for a penalty, which we never really got into. But there you go. Right.
Well, why does he want us to stop banging on about it?
Because we... It's been talked about a lot, whether somebody celebrates a goal or not.
It is so
okay,
boring.
We will never...
No, now we're going to go into it again.
You know, we bang on about lots of things the time. You know, yeah. We will never talk about Arsenal again, or Manchester United.
Or QPR.
Yeah.
All right. Question for Rafa. What's going on with Lewandowski?
Something's going on, which is really as much as I can tell you, because he is talking to a lot of clubs. He's out of contract in 2014. Dortmund are all but resigned for losing him. There was a story yesterday that he's actually been allowed to talk to other clubs. That was denied by Dortmund, but they aren't stupid. Sebastian Kehl, the captain, was asked in a talk show yesterday, you know, what is your feeling? Is he going to stick around? He said, no, I'm pretty sure he's off. So it is now the question, you know, can they afford... for political and football reasons, to sell him to Bayern, because they seem to be in a very good position as far as agreeing personal terms of him. These are the stories coming out of Italy. Sky Italia broke the news about Pep, and they also had a story on Lewandowski going to Bayern this week. And also within Germany, one or two people writing that Bayern are very close to agreeing terms. And it is such a sensitive issue, of course, if you go from Dortmund to Bayern, that it's a very difficult one to handle, and who knows what Dortmund will do if Lewandowski really turns up with a pre-contract in his hand.
Is Lewandowski a Guardiola player?
He is a Guardiola player in the sense that you can really play this fantastic pressing game when he's on the pitch. He will double up as another midfielder when they're not in possession. He's fantastic in chasing balls and holding up the ball, and his link-up play is really amazing. Don't know if you saw, had a chance to see the stuff he did against Leverkusen in the 3-2 win on Sunday. He played a pass for Marco Reus' opener, which was absolutely sensational. Sort of a no-look first pass on the half volley to play Royce in. And that's the kind of stuff he does. He's not as prolific as other number nines, but he's probably, in footballing-wise, the best pure number nine that there is in the world right now.
Mm. It's ESPN's Game of the Week. They do a little edited highlight of the Game of the Week that I've got it recorded from last night, so don't tell me any more about that match, for goodness sake.
Mr. Lewandowski's mind certainly seemed to be elsewhere during his country's game against Ireland last night. He was absolutely awful.
Really?
Didn't seem to be interested at all.
All right.
But, you know, it's friendly, it doesn't really matter.
There is a rumour going, doing the rounds, that he doesn't get on with the other Polish guys in the dressing room at Dortmund.
They're poles apart in a very real, real sense. Hey. Tell me, though, what else in the Bundesliga? Schalke, their ongoing collapse continues?
Well, Schalke's collapse is really extraordinary. If you remember, it's only a couple of months ago, or really, beginning of October, end of October, when they were absolutely fantastic in the game against Arsenal here at the Emirates. And they were in a great position in the league. And since then, they've completely fallen apart. They fired the manager. They've lost. They haven't won 9 out of the last 10 games in all competitions. They're 7 points off a Champions League spot. They look like they're going to get knocked out by Galatasaray.
Yeah, it's interesting that. Are they concerned about the influx of Galatasaraytikos?
Well, they're not happy that Galatasaray suddenly have Drogba and Snyder in their ranks, because when the draw was made, Galatasaray was probably the draw that everybody wanted, and now it looks a little bit different, especially with how poor Schalke have been playing. And somebody like Huntelaar, who signed a new deal just before Christmas, must really wonder, you know, what have I let myself into here?
Right, and he's got a geschwollen eye as well, hasn't he?
He has a very geschwollene Augapfel.
All right, now is that a long-term problem or what?
It shouldn't be a long-term problem, no.
All right, okay. Good. On the subject of Drogba and Galatasaray,
Barry is giving us quizzical looks.
His eye, his orb, is swollen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not sure why that is.
I don't know what that is.
Either. You mean like he's a black eye?
No.
No,
the socket. Like.
No, it's actually the
eyeball.
The eyeball. Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I wish him best of luck with that. On the subject of Drogba to Galatasaray, of course, there was some doubt about whether that move would go through, because, of course, Shanghai said, well, he's still under contract here for 5 months or so, and we haven't actually said he can go anywhere. But he is kind of, as I understand it, unilaterally declared that you haven't paid me, so my contract is worth nothing, so I'm out of here. I think that's right.
That's what he's done, but yeah, that doesn't stop Shanghai saying, yeah, we've got a contract.
So all right. They could spring a Shanghai surprise.
This week on the Guardian Audio Edition, Jason Burke on Al-Qaeda and how great they are a threat to the West now. John Fordham sums up the legacy of the jazz musician Ahmad Jamal, and Brian Logan on Mrs. Brown's Boys, how the worst comedy ever made became a smash hit. And in this week's audiobook review, we return to the roots of cyberpunk with William Gibson's 1984 classic Neuromancer. To download for free the Guardian Audio Edition supported by audible.co.uk, go to audible.co.uk/guardianaudio. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud and Audioboo. The Guardian Audio Edition, a new way to get the whole picture.
It's a big weekend for teams from Manchester. That 9-point gap. City looking a little bit like their season's already over. But hey, here come Everton. Everton, who beat Man United at the start of the season at Goodison Park, and who held them to an extraordinary 4-4 draw in this fixture at Old Trafford last season. So you've got Man United taking on Everton and Man City at Southampton. So if Man City can get the 3 points there, who knows if maybe that 9-point gap might not be reduced.
Yeah, absolutely. There are two factors, really. One is that the Madrid game is so close, so you can expect Fergie to have his fun with his team selection. And the other thing is that for about 15 years, Everton was pretty much a guaranteed 3 points. They came to Old Trafford, they just kind of settled for a 2-0 defeat, and they went home. But I don't think they're afraid of United anymore. They had a couple of really good results at Goodison in the last couple of years, and then the 4-all, I think, was a real turning point for them in terms of how they play United. They weren't afraid at all. Fellaini, United can't really cope with him, although he's doubtful, I think. But I think that's a really tricky fixture for United. They've got that, and then QPR away, I think, soon. If they get through both of those, then you would think they would be okay. But Sunday will be a really hard game, I think.
Well, having said that, whether City are going to get 3 points at Southampton is anything but a given. A company missing, I believe, again this weekend, although Yaya Toure will be back.
Yeah, they miss him so much, don't they? When Torre doesn't play, it reminds me of when Roy Keane didn't play for United. They could lose all manner of games. It was ludicrous, like Fulham at home and Middlesbrough at home, games that they would never lose him on the field. Southampton's not easy because they're actually playing really well. You wondered if the whole Adkins business might go into a sulk, but actually they've played extremely well in the three games under Pochettino.
Mm. And they played well against City back in the first meeting. When was that? Back in August, no?
Yeah, I think they were 2-1 up, weren't they?
Yeah.
City are weird. They haven't really lost two games, haven't they? But the problem is they just draw far too many. It's one of those games. I wouldn't expect Southampton to win, but you could certainly see a draw.
Yeah.
I would fancy Southampton to get a result against Manchester City a lot more than I would fancy Everton to get a result against United.
That's interesting. Interesting.
I think if United had their full team, I would be confident, but I think he'll change a number of players because Madrid is so important.
And with a 9-point lead, he can afford to as well, no?
Well, I suppose he'll feel like he can, yeah. Last year, obviously, they lost an 8-point lead in half the time, so it's quite tricky because they actually have a really good run until about the last six games when they then play, I think, Chelsea, Arsenal and City. Mm. So they kind of need to maintain maybe a 7-9-point lead up till then. And the Champions League, the further they go, the more Ferguson will kind of be excited by the prospect of one last Champions League and the more he'll tinker. So I think the 9-point lead is a little bit deceptive.
Mm. One last Champions League, interesting. Raphael?
No, I was just wondering what Rob thinks about this United, because their results are absolutely astonishing, how good their results are, and the points average is up there, I think, just behind Barcelona and Bayern. So even in comparative terms, they're having an unbelievable season, and yet we all don't seem to be terribly excited about this team.
No, well, I agree that we're not excited in terms of how good they are because they've looked so shoddy in many games and only started playing when they go behind. But actually, because of that, they've been really exciting to watch. Mm. And the most exciting United have been certainly since Ronaldo left. It's strange, isn't it? Madrid are how many points? 18 points off? And yet, I would fancy them to beat United, even though there's kind of a swing of about 27 points in terms of how far they are Barcelona and how far United.
Why do you fancy Madrid to beat United?
I think they're a better team. Yeah, they've just got better footballers, I think.
All right. Okay. 9 points in the gap between Man United and Man City. Meanwhile, top four race getting ever so tight now. Chelsea in third are only 1 point ahead of Spurs. And then you've got a 3-point gap to Everton. And then a further 1 point down to Arsenal with some distance behind Liverpool. Now, what's going on this weekend for the top four contenders? Chelsea are up against Wigan. You'd think that should be Chelsea, yeah.
No, I'm not going to say I fancy Wigan, but right. I think it's impossible with the goings on at Stamford Bridge at the moment to just be confident that Chelsea would win any game.
That's true.
You just don't know what's going to happen. They're clearly a better team than Wigan, but will they beat them? Not necessarily.
Demba Ba's out, of course.
And the visceral resistance to Benitez is so strong that a significant section of the crowd might actually, in a weird way, prefer Chelsea not to win this game.
Mm.
And then for Abramovich to pull the trigger, because this is now getting into the territory where he becomes, where his job is getting into danger. Because as long as he's third and ensuring that Champions League qualification will be fine, I think they'll always see out the season with him. But if he were to give up more points and suddenly Champions League qualification is in danger, Abramovich has always drawn the line at that spot and will probably fire him again.
All right, who do you think would be brought in at that point? Who's left?
It's impossible to speculate. They'll probably look for some kind of caretaker type, maybe try to get Hiddink back even for one last time, maybe even our friend Avram Grant.
Right, okay, cool. Well, they're only 4 points away from that nightmare scenario of fifth place. So Everton currently there, they, as we mentioned, are going to be at Old Trafford. Right behind Chelsea, just 1 point behind, are Spurs, who are hosting Newcastle, who beat them earlier on this season. Defoe is out. A lot of love for Lewis Holtby, though in his debut, some people are saying they don't need a forward. They can just play with Adebayor will be back, though.
I think they definitely need a forward, Spurs. I don't think you can rely on Holtby to score.
And Bale?
15 goals a season for you.
Right.
But Bale is an interesting one, because Bale under Radnor played like a false number nine a few times, where he played very much through the middle, and it didn't quite work out with him. But I think that is a possibility they could actually explore. I was surprised that Vyas Boros didn't try him there.
Hmm?
Could be a game of the weekend.
Do you think?
I think. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
It was 5-0 this to Spurs last season.
I'd be very surprised if they beat Newcastle 5-0 now, considering the performances Newcastle have put in the last two games. I don't really care who wins. I just think it could be a fantastic game.
All right. Arsenal are 4 points off the top four. They are at Sunderland, Barry. Memories of the 0-0 draw at the Emirates earlier in the season when we were all raving about Steve Bould's defensive input and that with the Gunners. But Arsenal coming in, they're a different-looking side now, aren't they?
Yeah, I'd be worried about that one. I think Arsenal will win it comfortably.
Really? Okay.
I think it would be interesting. They had a lot of players in action in midweek. I don't have all the numbers, but I'm sure that they're probably one of the clubs most hit in the Premier League by internationals. And they
more
have
so than Sunderland, you think?
Yes, yeah. That is my suspicion. And they have looked much improved with Giroud really finding his feet and Podolski looking a little bit more solid. Walcott, I think, makes a difference when he has consistent run inside the team. And of course, now with players coming back like Diaby, like Arteta, they have the depth that they need. The problem, I think, for Arsenal and Arsenal supporters is that Arsenal plays sort of in a very narrow corridor. When they do really well, they're third or fourth. When they do really badly, they're fifth or sixth. So it isn't terribly exciting to follow them. And I think that's what depresses so many Arsenal fans, that they feel the very best they can do in the league is third or fourth, and the very worst they can do is fifth or sixth, which would be a real nightmare. So even now that they're on a good run, I don't think it'll be enough to really let them do anything special this season.
No, nothing special this season. All right, okay. At the bottom, though, it's getting very, very dramatic. Very unpredictable, too. All sorts of last-minute changes last weekend, which saw Aston Villa, who looked like they were bouncing out of the bottom three, instead finding themselves back in it. But would I be crazy to suggest they're going to get a much-needed win this weekend at home to West Ham?
Who?
Villa. Aston Villa.
Sorry.
Aston Villa. Yeah,
I think they deserve a win. That draw against Everton last week must have been heartbreaking.
Yep.
It was actually when the equaliser went in, Paul Lambert's camera cut to him, and it was like the bit on The Simpsons where Bart keeps replaying the video where Ralph Wiggum's heart actually breaks. You can see it in his eyes, and that's what it reminded me of.
Oh. Yeah. Do you think he'll be a happier bunny than this weekend against West Ham? Oh, Andy Carroll back in the picture, of course.
It's so hard to say.
Is it?
You know, we've seen Villa play brilliantly this season. We've seen them be absolutely dismal and ditto for West Ham. You know, trying to call it ahead of the game, it's just impossible.
All right, we're going to go meet at Chelsea. Sorry, Rafa.
I would take West Ham for at least a point.
Really?
I think they have a bit more street smartness and know-how about them, and I think the kind of inexperience that Villa have shown and fragility will be exploited.
Okay. Now, we mentioned that we're going to be at Chelsea. The other bottom three side, of course, are QPR, who are now right back exactly where they were when Harry came in. 6 points from safety. And, look, they're going to be down at Swansea, who beat them 5-0 at Loftus Road. But that was the opening day of the season, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, yikes, because this is a Swansea team that's come on quite a long way since then, isn't it? What's going to happen when they host Harry's Rangers?
A hot, sexy 0-0, I think.
Do you think? Why would you possibly predict that?
They're both very good defensively, aren't they?
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Redknapp sorted them out. Redknapp sorted out defence. Swansea are obviously good in defence and also good at keeping the ball. I reckon an aesthetically pleasing 0-0.
All right. Okay.
Loic Remy now is out.
Yeah.
Long term, which is not ideal for QPR, who are paying him whatever, 100 grand a week.
Mm.
So, that was rather unlucky for them. And you would suggest their bid to stay up could be doomed.
Mm.
It's interesting, just an aside, how many great creative players are so good at organising a defence. I mean, two obvious examples would be Hoddle and George Graham. It seems like Laudrup really knows how to organise a defence.
Roberto Mancini? They play well defensively, don't they, City?
Yeah, they do for the most part, yeah. Find it quite interesting. I suppose it's logical in a way. They know what used to thwart them and so on, but just interesting.
Equally, Ozzy Ardiles is producer Ben.
Kevin Keegan.
Let's move on.
Equally, there are a lot of great defenders who've produced great attacking sides.
Steve Bruce. Who are you talking about? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm asking if there are.
Beckenbauer up to a point.
No,
right.
Not really a defender.
Where did Trapp play? When he was a player.
Trapp was the defensive player.
He hasn't produced any attacking sides.
Doesn't work out, does it? Okay, interesting.
But.
Yep. Zoff, the Italy goalkeeper. His Lazio and Italy sides were both quite attacking.
Mm. You wonder at what point Swansea will think, you know, we've got the League Cup final coming up. Mm.
That's not far away, is it? What, a couple of weeks away now?
Yeah, let's take it a bit easy. And this is the kind of game, I think, at home to QPR where they might just have their eye off the ball a little.
Wow, okay. And Reading, meantime, who just picked up the manager and player of the month baubles in an extraordinary double bubble for the Royals there. Of course, Adam Lafondre and Brian McDermott, the winners respectively of those. They're going to be at Stoke. They're going to be at Stoke.
I wasn't aware that Adam Lafondre had won Player of the Month.
Certainly did.
He was on goals on Sunday.
Was he?
On Sunday. And I would be curious to know, not curious enough to rewind and count, but how many times he said the word obviously. It was comical at first, and then it got really grating. It was, you know, I think he may have broken Ray Parler's old record for saying, you know, like 25 times in a 2-minute interview or something. But I don't understand why he doesn't start for Reading. But I suppose if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and they're going well at the moment.
Do you not think the specialist sub is really important? More goals are scored at that part of the game. You can win games as he has.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
I was surprised that more players aren't. Like, I think Walcott, for example, if he could ever stomach it, which he wouldn't, would be a magnificent sub.
Is it not the case that if a player is in form and scoring goals, then you should have him on the field for as long as possible? Or are you arguing that the freshness of their legs when they come on at
freshness, that? Tight defenders. And it's such a specific skill as well, kind of being able to adjust and immediately impose yourself on a game. Dzeko obviously is great at Solskjaer.
It was interesting, though, because Walcott, you think of the pace as being the key thing, tired legs, and on he comes with his pace. But you wouldn't say that with Edin Dzeko, would you?
No, I think it's more just game awareness with him, and it was the same with Sartre. Didn't Germany use Grabowski in 1970 to slaughter tired fullbacks?
Oh, that old chestnut.
Yeah, but I just think he was really successful. That's why they beat England as much as anything, because Grabowski ran Terry Cooper ragged when he came on. I'm just surprised it doesn't happen more. I don't know American sports, but I think it happens more in those, doesn't it?
There's special teams than that.
Yeah. Apparently. So
I'm told. Should bring on a kicker. Yeah. Get base on.
Right. Fair enough.
I bet you if Lafondre did get a run of games, I mean, he just wouldn't score many goals, I don't think.
One interesting aside to that game, I think, would be the form of Azmir Begovic over the next few weeks. Because
that's very
interesting. He is very hot property. And because Stoke have bought Jack Butland, they have all but said publicly that this guy will probably move on. And, you know, he's looking at Liverpool, looking at United, and he was very much in demand over the last couple of years, and Stoke vetoed moves that could have happened, and there is now an understanding in place that he can probably, for the right money, leave this year. And because they've got Butland already lined up, they certainly anticipate a big move for him, and I think if he keeps up his current form, that move might happen.
Well, how about that? That brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly Extra, would you believe? We'll be back on Monday. On Friday, there'll be a pay-per-view looking at one or two events from the week. Not sure what they'll be yet. Tune in and find out. And in the meantime, many, many thanks to Rob Smythe, to Raphael Honigstein, Barry Glendenning, and producer Ben, and you, listener. We will see you on Monday. Have a super weekend.